Hello, everyone. This is David Antion, and I want to take this opportunity to tell exactly what happened during the January 5th and 6th firings from the Worldwide Church of God and Ambassador College. There's been quite a bit of confusion, and a number of things have been said. But in spite of everything that has been said, neither Wayne Cole and I have ever told our story. We have never been able to publicly, in any public forum, tell our story. We have refrained from causing the church more problems by going to the newspapers or magazines or other forums to tell exactly what happened. So for most of the brethren, they've never heard from us, except those who have called. I have answered any number, scores, I suppose, maybe hundreds of phone calls and letters by now, asking me for my story, what has happened, what happened to me, what did I think of it. And I have tried to answer them one at a time, and really, now that I've got a full-time job in another organization, it's very hard for me to take the time individually to answer everyone, because every time I tell this story, it still takes a half hour to 45 minutes or an hour's time. So I want to take this time now to explain to you what happened during the January 5th and 6th firings. What happened that brought about the receivership, and exactly my experience of the things that happened in our visit with Mr. Armstrong and the firings that took place. Before I go on, let me say that I have tried to contact Mr. Armstrong several times now. Immediately after the firings of January 6th, which was a Sabbath day, on January 7th, I called Mr. Herbert Armstrong's home to try to talk to him personally. I was not able to get him. Instead, I was able to get a hold of his wife. And his wife said that he would call me back. However, I have never heard from him. She said he was too busy to talk to me, even though I told her I felt it was very important that we talk. I subsequently waited, because I knew that things were in a very emotional time, and I waited until in the middle of February, actually toward the end of February, and I wrote this letter dated February 20th, and I said, and I would like to quote that letter at this time, "Dear Mr. Armstrong, I hope this letter finds you in good health. I have felt that you and I have always had a most cordial and respectful relationship. We have sat in your office and home and talked for hours alone on many occasions. I have appreciated getting to know you personally over the many years we have worked together. It has been almost 7 weeks now since I was fired and disfellowshipped. I called your home on Sunday, January 7th, 1979, but was told you were too busy to talk to me at that time. I have waited from then till now, expecting to hear from you, but also realizing that you may be waiting to hear from me again. Now, after 7 weeks, I feel that sufficient time has elapsed, and perhaps now the excitement, fears, and angers have subsided. By now it should be apparent that I was not trying to overthrow your authority, nor was I involved in any, quote, conspiracy with others. Instead, I did what I thought you wanted done in an effort to support and help the church. For 20 years now, I have worked to help the church, the college, and to support you. The following facts should illustrate that I was not against you or the church. 1. I have not started or attempted to start any church or local congregation, nor have I conducted any Bible studies or church services in my home or any place else for those who would attend. 2. I have not joined any other religious group, either to attend or to preach at their services, though I have been asked. 3. I have not sent out a sympathy letter to tell my side of the story. 4. I have not written or called to the ministry to seek to form any alliance or to encourage leading off of church members into separate organizations. 5. I have not gone on any campaign to reach the brethren and the many friends that I have in the church, either by phone or by letter, nor has Molly, though many are expecting a full explanation from us. I have, however, had to answer hundreds of calls and letters from all over the USA and overseas asking what happened. I have said that there was no conspiracy, no attempt to hurt you or the church, that I myself still had not been able to talk to you or talk with you to get the situation ironed out. I have told them that I felt that there was a major misunderstanding and a great deal of action through fear and panic as a result of the court action. I told them that I hoped things could be resolved. And literally hundreds of brethren and several dozen ministers hope and pray that things can be resolved and that Christ's way of justice, mercy, and love will prevail. There may be a few in power who do not want me to be a part of the ministry or faculty. I began to feel that way last summer when I was told that I would not be teaching. I had been accused falsely of teaching that the man is not the head of the wife. I went to Mr. Rader and told him that I felt that perhaps I was not needed or wanted here anymore, and that perhaps I should just look for work elsewhere. He wouldn't hear of it, but instead encouraged me to write to you about what I teach and about gossip and accusation. The memo you put in the pastor's report, the principles of which continue to be violated. This was done in order to counter the false accusations of those who were accusing me. If indeed there is no room in the Worldwide Church of God or Ambassador College for me, then let us part in a Christian manner like gentlemen of honor. I do not understand the need for any campaign to denigrate my name and reputation. I have not done so to you, but have continued to uphold you even when I disagreed with the actions taken. I feel that you should direct all those under you to do the same with respect to me. Please tell them to stop slandering my name with lies and falsehoods. I hold no animosity. Instead, I appreciate the many opportunities I have had both in the church and in the college. I have made many wonderful friends. I have taught and been taught. I have helped and been helped. I have loved and been loved. I have fond affection for my college years, where I met my favorite person, my wife Molly. We had our courtship during our college days and had many dates, walks, and talks on the college campus. It is sad to realize that today we are not even allowed to walk on that campus where we once courted, the campus which we helped to build with our money and our physical labor. I have appreciated and enjoyed my work at Ambassador College and in the field ministry. I believe I have compiled an outstanding work record over the 20 years, helping to build, develop, and to strengthen this work. I have given 20 years of full-time loyal service. I have never contradicted the church teachings in the classroom or in church services. I have upheld you, Ted, Stan, and fellow evangelists and ministers in public forums. I have represented you and the institutions with dignity at socials and service clubs in Pasadena and Los Angeles. I feel now, after 7 weeks, that I have shown that I was not in any conspiracy against you or the work, which before God I was not. Instead, I sincerely believed I was carrying out what you directed to be done. Consequently, I have been hurt and disappointed over the way I have been dealt with. After 23 years of loyal full-time employment, to be summarily dismissed without even a hearing is very disappointing and disillusioning, to say the least. Even Nicodemus says, "Does our law judge any man before it hear him and know what he does?" in John 7, verse 51. Therefore, considering the years we have known each other, the closeness of our relationship, and the Christianity we both profess, I am bold to ask you for a personal talk that we might, in the spirit of Christian goodwill, iron out any misunderstandings and eliminate any animosity or hostility. Since it is impossible for me to reach you, and I hope this letter can get through to you, I ask that you please call me or write me, that we might set up a time and place where we can talk, or else talk over the phone. My telephone number is area code 213-449-8582. I look forward to hearing from you soon and pray for your continued good health. Sincerely, David Antium. Well, I have not heard from Mr. Armstrong since he received this. I know he went to his home because I have the return receipt from Rona Martin, who is Mr. Armstrong's housekeeper. She signed it on the 27th of February. I have received no correspondence from Mr. Armstrong since. Not a word, either by phone or by letter. The things that happened, as far as the receivership, happened in a way by surprise to all of us. No one was expecting, except those who were a part of the receivership, part of the action. But for the rest of us, none of us were expecting anything to happen on January 3rd, 1979. I had personally heard of rumors of lawsuits going back shortly after the days of the Thanksgiving Day. And I was told by one minister in the Hall of Administration, I think right around Thanksgiving time, that there was going to be some kind of action, lawsuit, that was coming, a class action suit. I asked him how he knew. He said he heard it by rumor from another pastor or associate pastor in the area. And I said, well, I'll believe it when I hear it or when I see it, because I've heard many rumors of class action suits. Well, I sort of dismissed it, but rumors persisted. Rumors came to me from other sources. People were saying that there were some former members that were going to make a class action suit. I had talked with Mr. Helge about 6 months prior to that, and maybe even 8 months prior to that, and he said, I'd asked him about a class action suit that I had read about in one of the ambassador report letters. They had mentioned some brethren were getting together for a class action suit, and Mr. Helge dismissed it, saying that people talk a lot about class action suits, but they don't know what they're talking about, and it's almost impossible for anyone to bring one against the church. So with those comments, I just took it that class action suits were almost out of the question. But rumors persisted. It became common discussions about a class action suit, as some kind of action, when it was going to take place. Rumors were that it would happen at the end of December. There were rumors saying that it would happen actually the beginning of December. But nothing happened, and it just continued to rock on. Approximately December 10th, well, I think exactly December 10th, Mr. Armstrong had talked to Wayne Cole in personal conversation and expressed to him his grave concerns about Mr. Rader's prominence in the church. Now, this was a surprise to Mr. Cole, who was so taken back by it that he later called me and also called Dr. Hay and also called Robert Kuhn to discuss the conversation with us. He discussed it separately with several of us. Now, what happened was this, that Mr. Armstrong had expressed to Wayne Cole that he feared that many people were leaving the church because of Stan Rader's prominence, and they were going with Ted. Stan was not a minister. People saw Mr. Stan as too prominent and perhaps the heir apparent, and the people would rather go with Ted than to remain and go with Stan. That's what Mr. Armstrong told Wayne Cole. He said he had it on reliable authority from several ministers in the field who were close to him, and Mr. Armstrong named those ministers. Wayne Cole was asked by Mr. Armstrong to generate some letters from the ministry. Mr. Armstrong said, Wayne, I need you to have some ministers write me and tell me how Stan is hurting the church so that I can have an excuse to take action against Stan and to take him out of the prominence. Mr. Armstrong did not want to dismiss Stan Rader from the church, nor did he want to relieve him of employment. It was nothing like that. He just wanted him to move out of the limelight and of the leadership role which Stan had taken upon Garner Ted Armstrong's dismissal from the church. Well, Wayne Cole didn't know what to do. My advice to him was to wait and see. Maybe Mr. Armstrong would change his mind. Maybe Mr. Armstrong was just emotional at the moment. It wasn't something to take action on or do anything about one way or the other. Well, it happened on December 10th, that phone call, and shortly after that, Mr. Armstrong and Stan Rader went to Jerusalem for the dedication of that park over in Jerusalem, and they returned. Mr. Cole then talked to Mr. Armstrong upon his return December 26th. And again, the subject of Mr. Rader came up, and again, Mr. Armstrong expressed grave concerns, grave fears. And this time, Mr. Armstrong, you know, said he really wanted Wayne to talk to him. He really needed Wayne Cole's help, and he really wanted to talk personally with Wayne Cole. Wayne Cole talked to him another time or two, and then went over to Tucson without my knowledge. I heard about it, that he was over there on a Thursday, I think December 28th or 9th, and then he came back on December, that same night. He went over on a Thursday and took a memo to Mr. Armstrong. His memo was about Stan Rader, and he expressed in the memo the things that Mr. Armstrong had been saying and added to them, and he said he did some checking up, and indeed, people were leaving the church, and in some cases, ministers said the main reason that we were losing people was because of the prominence of Stanley Rader. Mr. Armstrong then used Mr. Cole's memo as a basis in order to write Stan Rader a letter and to dismiss him from the church, from his duties in the church, saying to step down, asking Stan to step down out of the leadership role and only take the role of Mr. Armstrong's personal aide. Continue as the vice president of AICF and as the auditor and as the legal advisor. Well, this is the memo that Mr. Armstrong was writing. Mr. Armstrong wrote that memo on January 1st, part of New Year's Day, and read it to Wayne Cole January 2nd. He also then sent it hand-delivered by having the G2 fly over and having one of his aides, perhaps Mel Olinger or someone else that was with him, hand-deliver this memo to Stan Rader. Mr. Armstrong received a phone call from Stan the morning of January 3rd, blasting, or even maybe that night, January 2nd, blasting Mr. Armstrong, telling Mr. Armstrong that Mr. Armstrong, would hear from Stan's lawyers as a result. Now, this was January 2nd, January 3rd. On the morning of January 3rd, Mr. Cole once again received a phone call from Mr. Armstrong. Mr. Armstrong was concerned about Stan's reaction. He explained to Wayne Stan's very hostile reaction at first, that Stan had threatened him with a lawsuit, and Stan had threatened to tell the world what he knows, and so on. Mr. Armstrong was quite concerned about Stan's reaction and continued to talk to Wayne Cole. Wayne then was beginning to get phone calls over from the Hall of Administration telling him that something had happened, that there were policemen in the Hall of Administration, reporters, there were people, seemed like from some kind of investigatory agency, and they were serving papers, and Virginia Keniston, who is Mr. Rader's secretary, was calling around telling people to lock their office doors, not to talk to anyone, and to not let anyone into the fourth floor offices. Wayne Cole then asked Mr. Armstrong, or told Mr. Armstrong, about this in that conversation on the morning of January 3rd, and Mr. Armstrong thought that it had something to do with this subpoena on this trial that was of the man that had accused Ted. Actually, it was the Gary Bagley trial. Mr. Armstrong did not know what it was. And so Wayne Cole said he didn't know either. He would check into it and find out a little bit more about it. And so I was at home that morning, and I had class that Wednesday night. It was Wednesday, January 3rd. I was preparing a paper for my class. I got calls here as well, and I was told that there was all kinds of commotion over at the Hall of Administration, and that there were policemen, and that there were reporters, and there were TV cameras, and the whole place was just pandemonium. Well, I was still at the house, and I thought, well, I better not go over there because I won't be able to finish my paper. It was due that evening, and I had it mostly done, just needed to finish typing it up and putting it all together and organizing it in a bibliography and, you know, all the rest of the stuff. So I remained home for that period of time. I received a phone call from Wayne Cole, and he asked me about the situation, and I told him what I heard. And then a little while later, as the morning progressed, in the late morning, I received another phone call, and it was Wayne Cole saying that a gentleman was going to call us on the phone from New Jersey or New York, and that this gentleman wanted both of us on the phone at the same time, Wayne Cole and me, as a witness to the things we were going to talk about. So I put my phone down, and, you know, hung up the phone, be sure it was free, and all of a sudden it rang, and then we began to talk. The gentleman's name was John Tewitt. He was a long time, or at least about a 12-year church member from New Jersey. He had subsequently been sympathetic with Garner Ted Armstrong and had helped support Garner Ted Armstrong's campaign back there in New Jersey. He told us that he still loved the Worldwide Church of God and that he wanted to see it cleaned up, and he was very concerned about what had happened in the Worldwide Church of God, that a man like Stanley Rader had taken such prominence and such control of the church. He was very concerned about this and said that they were filing a class action suit. He was part of that class action suit. He told us that what we were seeing that morning of the receivership, I don't know that he said receivership, but the things that were happening, he told us that it was an attorney general's action, that all of that was going to continue. That lawsuit, there was a class action suit that was going to continue. They were not going to let up on it until things were straightened out, that the books were right, that we had a viable board of directors that examined things, that there were checks and balances to keep money from being siphoned off. He cited another situation where one of the prominent leaders or gentlemen was supposed to or alleged to have taken several tens of thousands of dollars for his own personal business, and he demonstrated that this was the thing that had to stop. Well, we talked to him. Wayne Cole said, well, look, I've got to get together. We've got to do something, And he called me after we finished the telephone call and said, what do we do? And I said, I have to finish this paper. I can't do anything till I do that, and I have class this evening. Well, Wayne checked around. He talked to some of the aides over in the Hall of Administration, some of the men in his area, some of the ministers and his staff, on his staff. And they advised him to do something, that there was absolutely nobody in charge over there, that things were going to pot, and somebody had to do something. So Wayne Cole called a meeting and asked me if I would come to it. The meeting was scheduled for around 2 o'clock or 2:30 at Wayne Cole's house, and I said, well, I don't know if I should go to it. I need to go to class, and I need to turn in my paper. But he persuaded me and said that it was a very serious situation. He really would have liked my help. He wanted Dr. Hay there and several others, and that that he would ask me to please not go to class today. The church was in desperate need, and he needed some kind of counsel. And so I said, okay, I'll meet him. I finished my paper. I gave it to my son to take down to USC for me, and I went over to Wayne Cole's house. Robert Kuhn was there. I was there. Dr. Herman Hay was there. Art Mocaro was there. Steve Martin was there. Wayne Cole and his wife. And Ray Wright. Ray Wright had gone to breakfast with Wayne Cole that morning and asked for a breakfast meeting with him. And when they came back, all these troubles started, and Ray Wright stayed on throughout that day. We talked over the situation and told the men what we had heard from John Tuitt. We then decided to call Mr. Armstrong. Wayne Cole did. He talked to Mr. Armstrong a while on the phone and asked Mr. Armstrong if several of us could come over and talk to him privately, because of the thing that had been brought up about Stan and about this class action suit and about what John Tuitt had told us. The main reason he was conducting this class action suit was because of the prominence of Stan Rader. Therefore, we talked to Mr. Armstrong and told him all of this on the phone, and said that Wayne asked for a private meeting, and if he would mind meeting us at a motel. The reason Wayne asked for this is that once before, Mr. Armstrong had told Wayne that if you want to come over, I would be glad to meet you. If you want to talk privately, I'll meet you. And this was over Stan Rader's situation and the previous phone calls. I will be glad to meet you at a place. I can meet you at the Marriott or one of the motels there close to my home. So Wayne asked Mr. Armstrong if he would do that. Mr. Armstrong said yes, he would. We caught the G2. Mr. Armstrong said that he was going to get the G2 out of town immediately. By that time, he had received a phone call either from Mr. Rader or Mr. Helge telling him that the church was under siege, that there was some kind of state action, and that they were coming in to seize the books and the possessions of the church. Mr. Armstrong said he wanted to get the G2 out of town immediately and for us to drive down to the Burbank Airport and catch it. We did so. We picked up one newspaper. Star News was out that afternoon with the headline, Ambassador Raided. It explained that it was the action of the Attorney General's office against the church. We boarded the G2 hurriedly. There was no time for food or eating or anything. There were no stewards on it. They were just going to take the G2 over, and then we had to come back commercially. It was decided that Wayne Cole, Herman Hay, Ray Wright and I, the three of us evangelists, and then Ray Wright said he wanted to go because he hadn't seen Mr. Armstrong since all this began. And we thought it was good because Ray Wright had worked in the business office and he knew some of the goings-on there and would be able to shed some light on the situation. We arrived at Tucson about 7 o'clock, probably 7 our time, or I don't know, maybe 7 their time. By the time we got to Mr. Armstrong's house, let's say it was around 7 o'clock Tucson time, we stayed and talked to Mr. Armstrong about 3 to 3.5 hours prior to the time, and about 10:30 Mr. Armstrong's time, after many hours of discussion, telling him what we had heard, telling him about the situation, and him expressing his doubts about Mr. Rader again. Mr. Ray Wright then told him all about the business area and the business office, and that they probably would find some improprieties, if not some illegalities. Ray Wright said, I don't know if anything is illegal, but I'm sure that there are a lot of things that are unethical. So Ray Wright begged Mr. Armstrong to cooperate. We brought up the fact that we had bad publicity in the press, and that if this goes on very long, it will certainly hurt the brethren and hurt the church to continually have bad publicity headlines that were negative toward the church. So our recommendation was that as soon as possible, Mr. Armstrong ought to make some kind of release that will stop the headlines. And we felt that saying something to the effect that we would cooperate with the Attorney General, that Mr. Armstrong was appointing someone as his personal representative. We urged Mr. Armstrong to come over to Pasadena himself and take charge, and if not, that he would appoint someone in his place, someone preferably that everyone knew was honest and upright and that would not, you know, cast any aspersions against the church. And the logical choice was Wayne Cole. We asked Mr. Armstrong if we could have some kind of press release to make to the newspapers immediately, and he decided, well, okay, he would make some kind of press release if that's what was best for the church. So he got up, went in his office, Dr. Hay and I, and I think Ray Wright followed him in. Wayne Cole was a little nervous. He said, look, I don't want to be appointed this, and if so, make it only temporary until this crisis is done, because I don't want to appear to be taking charge or be the second man in control, and I don't want Mr. Meredith and Mr. McNair to feel that I have done something to grab control of the church. So he said, I'll take it only for the duration of this crisis. And so Mr. Armstrong said, okay. So he went in, and Wayne Cole took a walk outside, and the other three of us went in with Mr. Armstrong into his room. He sat at a typewriter and typed it himself personally on his typewriter with large type. He finished and then turned and signed it and then asked us for our comments. And Dr. Hay said, well, you've repeated one sentence, one phrase, twice. And he would suggest crossing out the repeat of that phrase the second time. And so the famous press release that has been printed, and most ministers received it as a part of a mailgram in the mail. We thanked Mr. Armstrong after he had written the letter. It was close to 11 o'clock, and we went in his kitchen with him, and we thanked him. We gave him a hug goodbye. Everyone embraced Mr. Armstrong as we left, and as we began to walk out the door, there was Ramona Armstrong standing at the door, looking at us, in my opinion, like daggers. She looked very disturbed and upset. And I knew something was immediately wrong. I first thought maybe she was upset at us for being there too long, and maybe we had taxed Mr. Armstrong's strength. And so, you know, we apologized to Mr. Armstrong keeping him up too late, and he thanked us for coming over, and we said goodbye, and then we all walked out. As we got in the car, we were all very admiring of Mr. Armstrong, because one of the things Mr. Armstrong said as he walked into his office to write the memo appointing Wayne Cole as acting chief executive officer was that, well, this will certainly wreck the relationship between me and Stan. Well, we were all justifiably proud of Mr. Armstrong for taking such a courageous step to appoint Wayne Cole then as acting chief executive officer, knowing that this might end a good relationship that he'd had with Stan Rader for quite some time. So we got in the car. All of us were very happy. We thought that it was the right step to take. Dr. Hay did. Ray Wright did, Wayne Cole did, I did. We went down to the airport, and by the time we arrived, it was 11:30, quarter of 12. Our plane took off at 1 o'clock Tucson time. We hadn't had any dinner, so we ate some food there in a cafe or restaurant that was open that late. It wasn't what you call gourmet food, but it was something to fill our stomachs. And then the plane left at 1 o'clock in the morning Tucson time, which would have been midnight Pasadena time. By the time we arrived in Los Angeles International Airport, it was approximately 1:15. We were met at the airport by several of the men on Mr. Cole's staff. Steve Martin, Art Mocaro, and Robert Kuhn also had come down because they all were anxiously awaiting what had happened and wanted to hear from us all that had happened over in Tucson, what Mr. Armstrong's reactions were, what he had said to us, and what was going to be done about this very crucial and serious situation. We drove from the Los Angeles International Airport over to the Burbank Airport because Wayne Cole had left his car sitting at the Burbank Airport. It took us out of our way, but we went to the Burbank Airport first, and then from there, each one of us had to be dropped off at his home. And by the time I arrived home and got in bed, it was close to 3 o'clock or maybe a little after 3. We were up the next morning early because we wanted immediately, we had agreed that we would get up early and release this press release to all the newspapers as soon as possible and call a press conference because we wanted to stop the bad publicity. We did so. We were most of the morning talking to some reporters, trying to type up the press notes and make another additional press release. Wayne Cole made several press releases. They were sent out also to the ministers, and I won't take the time to read them here. But we were getting reports that there was quite a bit of resistance to the receiver's actions on the campus, that no one would cooperate with him, that instead of cooperation, there was active resistance. There was an encouragement of disobedience and to resist in every way possible. Well, this was contrary to what Mr. Armstrong had said in the press release. He said, "I will take every opportunity to cooperate with the Attorney General's office. And if there are any improprieties, if those improprieties exist, I want them to be known." So we felt that he meant exactly what he said. So Wayne Cole took the time to write a memo to all employees. And with consultation, why, here's the memo that was written. "The enclosed news releases from Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong and myself plainly speak for themselves. I would like to add that pursuant to Mr. Armstrong's wishes, you should fully cooperate with the Attorney General's office in all respects. We are to be the light of the world. Our light is to shine forth to the world. As God's people, we must never do anything we have to be ashamed of. We need not hide out, act clandestinely or furtively, or sneak around, peering out from behind locked doors. Let us place our faith in God and seek to please Him spiritually. We will rely on Him to bless and protect us because of our spiritual and moral righteousness and our dedication to doing His work of preaching the gospel. Let us remember our calling to be about that work fervently now. With love, your brother in Christ, C. Wayne Cole." That letter, that memo was done that morning and duplicated, and then we got calls saying that there was a meeting called for all employees, or at least for department heads, by the receiver. Wayne Cole then called the office or the campus. He had received a call from Raymond McNair, who wanted to know whether or not the college employees should go to such a meeting. And Wayne Cole finally called over and talked to talked to Raymond McNair, and Raymond McNair was persuaded at that time, when he talked to Wayne Cole on the phone, that we should cooperate, that we should believe Romans 13, and we should submit, meant to submit and obey, which it does mean. And we, obviously, everyone knows that you don't obey any force that tells you to do something contrary to God's direct will, but to obey all the authorities' words up to the place of breaking God's direct will. And that direct will has to come directly from the Scripture and not just from people or any human beings' statements. Well, we talked to Raymond McNair. He was persuaded we ought to do that, and then Wayne Cole called the campus and asked to talk to the receiver. Found out that the receiver's name was Wiseman, and that he had been a judge. And so when Wayne Cole got on the phone, he said, "Well, how do I address you?" And the Judge Wiseman said, "Just call me Judge." And so Wayne Cole said he apologized. He told him how sorry he was that there was such a resistance, and that he read Judge Wiseman the memo or the press release that Mr. Armstrong had given, and said that he was going to implement Mr. Armstrong's wishes and that there would be full cooperation. Judge Wiseman said that this was the first ray of sunlight he had heard or had since he had come on to the campus. And then we went over to the campus to attend that employees' meeting. The memos were being passed out to try to settle all the confusion. There was just mass confusion all over the campus. People didn't know what to do. They didn't know whether to go or not to go. There were divided camps, most of it coming from Mr. LaRavia's office, who was directly assistant to Mr. Rader, and he was foaming all kinds of resistance. And when we got on the campus, we found that Mr. LaRavia was still calling around. After Wayne Cole had called him and told him to cooperate, he was still calling around asking people, telling people that they didn't have to go to the meeting, and implying that they should not go. Well, Wayne Cole then asked Ellis LaRavia to go home and suspended him, told him to go home. He was suspended from his duties for the remainder of that day, and that Wayne Cole would talk to him subsequently. Well, that afternoon, or that morning, we went to the
meeting, the receiver, Judge Wiseman, got up and explained to everyone what the receivership was, tried to explain that it was not an adversary proceeding, that the state had taken an action to, as a receiver, to protect the assets of the church, to ensure that nothing of the church's assets or money would be ripped off. Obviously, Judge Wiseman had to be paid for his services. But other than that, the state said that we want to be sure that nothing is sold off, no property is sold, no money is given out to any other things, but that all normal duties of preaching the gospel, all salaries would continue, all radio stations would be paid, all printing services would be done, and that he did not want to do anything to disrupt the normal duties of the corporation. And he said that you people ought to be happy to have such an investigation because you are giving money. You are giving money to an organization for the purpose of preaching the gospel, and you should want to be sure that whatever reason you're giving the money for, that it is going for that purpose. And that's all this audit will do, will be to ensure that whatever improprieties exist are known and corrected, and that you can be sure that your money is going to go for the purpose for which you intended it. So, it was a nice talk. He introduced some of the other staff people, and it was the first time that any of us had ever met Judge Wiseman or ever spoken a word to him, to Mr. Chodas, to Deputy Attorney General Tapper, and none of us would have even known who they were. I would not have been able to tell you who Deputy Attorney General Tapper was. I wouldn't have not have been able to tell you who the Deputy Attorney General was in the state of California for Los Angeles area. Nevertheless, we met those people. Wayne Cole was asked by Judge Wiseman to go to lunch. Oh, one thing I must mention, a very unfortunate happening took place at that meeting. At the close of the meeting, Judge Wiseman introduced Wayne Cole and said that he was very happy with Mr. Armstrong's appointment of Wayne Cole, and that Wayne Cole got up and said a few words and said that he would try to work closely with Judge Wiseman and represent Mr. Armstrong here on the campus. Dr. Hay put his hand up after Judge Wiseman mentioned that he had authority over all the assets. He was not interfering with the spiritual things, but over the physical assets he had authority. He also had authority to control the money, therefore he had authority to hire and fire as far as the physical corporation. Not as far as the church, only the physical corporation. And Dr. Hay then asked the question, well, if you have that authority, maybe Mr. Armstrong did not have the authority to appoint Wayne Cole as his acting chief executive officer. Maybe you would want to choose someone else. That was the implication behind Dr. Hay's question. And Judge Wiseman said, well, whether or not Mr. Armstrong has the authority, I would appoint Wayne Cole as my acting chief executive officer. Well, from that very innocent and kind of ambiguous comment, Dr. Hay's question was very ambiguous, and the answer came out sort of ambiguous as well, but people misinterpreted it and took it that Judge Wiseman had fired Mr. Armstrong. At least that was the rumor. It was grossly distorted by, I believe, those who wanted to make it grossly distorted, and the rumor went out that Judge Wiseman had fired Mr. Armstrong as the spiritual head and had replaced him with Wayne Cole. In a court testimony on January 5th, on the afternoon of Friday, January 5th, Judge Wiseman was asked that question and said he denied that he had ever fired Mr. Armstrong or intended to fire Mr. Armstrong. He intended no such thing. And when the rumor started that he had done so, even on Thursday afternoon, he asked us if that's the way we understood his remark. And I told him that I had understood his remark to merely corroborate and confirm Mr. Armstrong's appointment of Wayne Cole, not to supersede Mr. Armstrong. Well, anyhow, Thursday, right after the meeting, that was Thursday morning, January 4th, Judge Wiseman asked Wayne Cole to go out to lunch with him. Wayne Cole turned around and looked at me and said, I'd like to have someone else to go out to lunch with us. And so he said, would you mind if David Antion went? I'd like to have him do some assistance work with me. And so Judge Wiseman said, fine. So we all went to lunch. And we talked. It was a very nice visit. He explained what the receivership was and some of the legal technicalities of it and so on. He was said that he did not want to side one way or the other, that he was a neutral party. He wasn't here to judge the church or to judge Mr. Rader or to judge Mr. Armstrong or any of the corporate officers. He was here merely to protect the assets of the corporation. He was for the corporation, not against it. He did tell us that he had to dismiss, I think, Mr. Rader's secretary for making such a resistance. And he asked her if she was loyal to the church or to Mr. Rader. And he didn't want people being loyal to people. He wanted the corporation preserved, not individuals benefited. Well, we had a nice luncheon, and we came home, returned around 1 or 2. And that afternoon, Judge Wiseman wanted to talk to Mr. Armstrong. And Wayne Cole also wanted to call Mr. Armstrong to give him an updated report on what was happening. By that time, we also started hearing rumors that Wayne Cole was going to be replaced. And so Wayne Cole called Mr. Armstrong and talked to him and said, "Mr. Armstrong, there's a rumor that you are displeased with me and you're going to that you want to replace me." And Mr. Armstrong said, "Well, you had no right to fire Ellis LaRavia." Mr. Cole explained that he did not intend to fire Ellis LaRavia, that he had not fired Ellis LaRavia, that he merely suspended him and wanted to talk to him the next day. Mr. Armstrong continued. Wayne Cole said, "Mr. Armstrong, the receiver is here and would like to talk to you." Mr. Armstrong adamantly refused. By then, it was plain that someone had talked to Mr. Armstrong, had given him quite a bit of false knowledge, and made him extremely fearful, because he said that the receiver was there to destroy the church, they were going to change the doctrines of the church, they were going to change the structure, they were trying to fire him, that he had been fired. Wayne Cole said, "No, sir, no one had fired you. That's absolutely not true." But Mr. Armstrong would not listen. And Wayne Cole finally motioned to me to get on the phone so that I could help explain it. And I got on the phone with Mr. Armstrong to try to explain to Mr. Armstrong exactly what was happening. He would not listen. The thing that came up also was about the defense lawyer. We asked that Mr. Armstrong please get any lawyer you want, but do not use Mr. Rader's personal lawyer, because we felt that Mr. Rader's personal lawyer would be more interested in protecting Mr. Rader than he would in protecting the church. And furthermore, Mr. Rader's personal lawyer's name had appeared on documents that the receiver had. We saw a copy of the brief that was filed with the judge that brought on this court order. And there was Mr. Rader's personal lawyer's name on a transaction for the Loma Vista home there in Beverly Hills. So we were, you know, a little bit worried having Mr. Rader's lawyer defend the church might end up that the church wouldn't be defended, it would be Mr. Rader that would be defended, and the church interests would go down the drain. We were concerned about the church. We asked Mr. Armstrong, use any other law firm you want. Any other law. We'll get the biggest, the best law firms in Southern California. Please use them. Mr. Armstrong would not listen. He was very adamant. The phone call ended on a kind of a sad note, but we were acquiescing. He said, "Okay." We said, "Mr. Armstrong, anything you want, okay, fine with us. If you want Mr. Rader's lawyer, fine. But our advice is, for the best interests of the church, get another lawyer." That also was distorted. That conversation was distorted, and later, I suppose many of you have heard that we were trying to tell Mr. Armstrong to not use Mr. Rader's lawyer, but to use the plaintiff's lawyer, Mr. Chodos and the Attorney General's lawyer, which is ridiculous. We never said any such thing. We said that we would use any other major law firm in Southern California. And so the whole thing was turned around. Mr. Armstrong still did not fire Wayne Cole, still did not put Wayne Cole out of his office or tell Mr. Cole that he was dismissed. But it was kind of, we knew that Mr. Armstrong was a little displeased because of the situation with Ellis LaRavia. The next morning, the area coordinators were in town. They'd come out Thursday evening, and Mr. Cole was having a meeting in his office with a number of the ministers. And then we got word about 8:30 that there was going to be a meeting. There was a meeting called in the auditorium. It was a church service, we were told, in the auditorium at 9 o'clock. This was on a Friday, January 5th. A church service? Well, that wasn't the date. Wayne Cole was still in charge, and so Wayne Cole said, "Well, he's going to go over and find out what's happening." But we waited around, and by the time we went over, it was a rainy day. We got over there at about 5 minutes till 9. And as we walked up onto the porch of the auditorium, the Ambassador Auditorium, and started to walk toward the doors. There were some men pointed, and we were just 2 or 3 feet away from the doors by that time. They must have been talking and didn't see us coming up, because all kinds of people were walking in, filing in for the church service. Someone then pointed and said, "There they are." And I noticed that the most of the men were those employed in the accounting area and also under Mr. LaRavia's area, building and grounds. And they, as Wayne Cole began to walk into the doorway, Raymond McNair was there and began to shut the door right on Wayne Cole. Dr. Hay, who had already gone inside, grabbed the door and pulled it open, telling Raymond McNair, "You're not going to do that. You let him in." And so Wayne Cole walked in, but there were others pushing and shoving. Raymond McNair tried to jump in front of Wayne Cole. Others were pushing. Robert Kuhn walked in, and somebody pushed him and wouldn't let him in, tried to shove him outside the door. It was an awful scene. One of the gentlemen started to push me, but then I had known him from back in Ohio, and I looked at him and said his name and said, "This is me. You know, what's going on?" And then he let me walk in. No one pushed me. But they were shoving and pushing. Robert Kuhn was being pushed. Wayne Cole was being pushed. A punch or two were thrown. Someone grabbed the person who was pushing Robert Kuhn. It was just an awful scene. And in the background of this scene were the words, "Dedicated to the great God." Those words in gold on that beautiful onyx wall in the Ambassador Auditorium. And I thought, what a travesty. Here are people who are supposed to be so dedicated to the great God, a building supposed to be so dedicated to the great God, and brother is being turned against brother, fighting and pushing and shoving and punching, and it was the most awful scene, and I began to cry, and then I began to shout at the brothers, I began to shout at church members there and say that this is not right, let's get a hold of ourselves, brother is being turned against brother, all to save Stan Rader. And I said those words, I suppose, because I saw that most of the people who were doing the shoving were from the accounting department, Mr. Bickett's area, and Mr. LaRavia's area, and both Mr. Bickett and Mr. LaRavia report directly to Stan Rader, and it was those men. And also, Doc Kessler was there, Jack Kessler's father, and Jack Kessler works directly for Mr. Rader, and so I began to see that this situation involved Mr. Rader's forces. And Wayne Cole... Raymond McNair jumped in front of Wayne Cole at one place and said, "Wayne Cole, do you believe that God is Mr. Armstrong's apostle?" Wayne Cole said, "No, Raymond, I do not. I believe that Mr. Armstrong is God's apostle." And then Raymond said, I didn't mean to say it that way. And so Robert Kuhn said, "Raymond, we know what you meant." And so they walked on in, past him, and entered the auditorium. Many of the area coordinators saw that scene. They could testify, if they wished, that that was the way it was. There was quite a bit of argument, talking, at least a very heated discussion, down at the front of the auditorium. Mr. McNair was there again, other people from Mr. Meredith, and some of the area coordinators pleading and saying, look, let's all discuss this. What is going to happen? They wouldn't say what was happening, but we all felt, because we'd heard the rumors, that Wayne Cole was going to be replaced. And there was quite a bit of discussion saying, look, let's all get together. Let's all sit down and iron this out. Let's all talk. And Raymond McNair was adamant, "No, I'm going to follow only Mr. Armstrong's orders. If he orders me to do it, I'm going to do it. Regardless of what it is, I'm going to do it." And I think someone said that they wanted to ask Raymond McNair, "If Mr. Armstrong ordered you to kill someone, would you do that?" But that was kind of sarcastic. No one, actually, I don't think anyone asked him that. Nevertheless, finally, the meeting began to started. Wayne Cole sat down, all the area coordinators, and Mr. McNair talked first. Mr. Meredith then came out and read Mr. Armstrong's latest affidavit, in which he said that it was duly sworn before me, and they read it. It replaced Mr. Cole and put Mr. Meredith in charge of the field ministry. All of this was done without a word to Wayne Cole. Mr. Armstrong did not call Wayne Cole ahead of time. He didn't even say, "Wayne, I'm going to replace you. Wayne, I'm going to change you. Wayne, I think you've overstepped your bounds, and I want you to step down out of that position." He was completely replaced as from the ministry, not just replaced as the acting chief executive officer, not just told that, look, Wayne, I made a mistake, I acted too hastily, and I don't want you in that position anymore. He was dismissed from his position as head of the worldwide ministry. Not on the basis that he did a bad job. just on the basis of the fact that someone had told Mr. Armstrong that Mr. Armstrong, had been fired and that Wayne Cole had taken his place. And that wasn't even true. No one even asked to find out if it were really true. Mr. Armstrong must have just believed it. Well, some had misinterpreted Wayne Cole's intentions because after the meeting, after Mr. Meredith had finished, Wayne Cole started up onto the stage and Mr. Meredith blocked him and they wouldn't let him and there were people there. Some of the ones in the sound room who ran the microphones shut the mics off and played loud music so that Wayne Cole couldn't say anything. But by that time, no one stopped to ask Wayne Cole what he wanted to say. He merely at that time wanted to say a few words in his own behalf to say that, look, I will abide by Mr. Armstrong's ruling. I will abide by this. I'm not going to cause trouble. But there was so much panic and so much fear that no one even stopped to ask what Wayne Cole was going to say. So Wayne left. He came back to his office. A number of the area coordinators came back with him. I was up there. Wayne was very discouraged. And I just felt that Mr. Armstrong couldn't have written that. I thought that that was a hoax, that Mr. Armstrong would not have done it, and that Wayne Cole was still in charge, and I wasn't going to abide by it, because after all, we were just over there the night before, you know, two nights before, or the night before, on Wednesday evening. This was Friday morning. Mr. Armstrong had embraced Wayne Cole. Mr. Armstrong had embraced me and Herman Hay and Ray Wright. Mr. Armstrong had just told us what he wanted, that he wanted cooperation. Now he was appointing Stan Rader to fight the receivership, to fight against this, the control. And it just didn't make any sense to me. I just couldn't believe it. Well, we went to lunch that Friday morning. Everyone was somewhat discouraged and no one wanted to do anything. They didn't know what to do about it. They tried to reach Mr. Armstrong but couldn't. And well, we went to lunch, Wayne Cole and I, and then decided that we would go down to the afternoon hearing. Mr. Chodos had come down and talked and said, look, there was going to be a hearing, and at least Wayne Cole, he wanted him to at least testify to what might have happened here. Was there shoving and pushing over there? And someone said yes, that there were one of the men had witnessed someone stopping Wayne Cole and saying certain things. And so we decided to go down to the hearing, and I went with Wayne Cole. It was a crowded courtroom, and you probably know all the decisions. The outcome was that Wayne Cole never did say anything on the witness stand. The judge never did reverse the receivership. That was January 5th. But rumors were beginning to circulate that Wayne Cole was fired, that he was not only dismissed from his job, he was fired from the whole organization. Furthermore, that he was being put out of the church. Someone came up to me, one of the brethren, the many brethren that were there, one of them came up and said, I'd heard you were disfellowshipped. And I said, disfellowshipped for what? No, I said, that's not true. Well, Wayne Cole and I came home. It was late. By the time the whole thing was over, it went way into the Sabbath. It was 8 o'clock before the crowd dismissed from there. It seemed that none of the conservative people, so-called conservatives who are so strict about the Sabbath, thought anything about being in a courtroom after the sunset and employing lawyers after sunset, nor did Mr. Rader worry about making a news release after sunset. But nevertheless, we all left, came home, the rumors were circulating that we were going to be fired. The next morning, I received a call from one of the ministers here who had talked to Ellis LaRavia, and he said, Dave, I just want to tell you that Ellis LaRavia talked to Mr. Armstrong this morning and told me that Mr. Armstrong said no one was going to be fired and no one would be disfellowshipped. And I said, well, I appreciate that, and I'll let Wayne Cole know. That'll make his day better. So I called over to Wayne Cole's house and told him that Mr. Armstrong had said that. Wayne said, well, fine, I'm relieved to hear that, Dave. He said, I just don't know what my job will be now, and wondering what position I'll have or what job I'm going to be doing now. And I said, well, I wouldn't worry about it. You know, I'm sure they'll find something for you and all that. So we ended the conversation. Both of us were worn out. We had been through a lot of stress and strain. We were tired. We didn't feel like going to church that day, so I was going to stay here at the house and just listen. I had a piped-in phone line from the auditorium, and it came right through our stereo receiver. We could hear the church services that way. Well, we listened, and Mr. Meredith got up at the beginning of the afternoon service. Mr. Luker took the morning service and said that There were no disfellowshippings, and that Mr. Chapman was going to be talked to, but no one was going to be disfellowshipped. Mr. Meredith, at the beginning of his service, said no one would be disfellowshipped, and that we needed to make a healing breach, and so, I mean, heal the breach that had happened, and that he would talk to a few people about their attitudes, but by and large, no one would be disfellowshipped. That was at the beginning of his sermon. By the end of his sermon, everything had reversed. I had gotten a phone call that morning that said the G2 just took off and that it was loaded with people going to see Mr. Armstrong. It was Mr. Rader and Mr. Helge and several other people went over to see Mr. Armstrong. The G2 came back in that afternoon. So that morning, Mr. Armstrong was not of the mind to disfellowship Wayne Cole or me, but that afternoon, a memo came purporting to be from Mr. Armstrong saying, and it was read to the entirety of the congregation, most of you who have attended church heard it. You know what it said, and we were disfellowshipped. You heard the entire tape. You heard Mr. Meredith read it. Had we gone to church that day, had I gone to church with my son and my wife, they would have had to sit there and listen, and the congregation would have looked, and people would have been turning to me, and I would have had been marked without notice, no one saying anything to me. I was shocked even being here at the house to hear my name mentioned as being disfellowshipped from the Worldwide Church of God. No one called me. No one talked to me ahead of time. No one came over to even check out my attitude or even say anything, or if they felt that I was being sent to the lake of fire, to even ask me or persuade me to change my mind or whatever they thought I was doing wrong. To this day, no one has done that. To this day, no one has gone out of their way to come over here and ask me or to ask me to change and repent and come back into the church. To this day, no one has tried to seek those who they felt they were sending to the lake of fire. For if the Worldwide Church of God leaders believe that when they disfellowship someone from the Worldwide Church of God, they are sending them to eternal damnation in the lake of fire, what kind of men can these men be? How much of the love of God could they possibly have to disfellowship someone without notice, without even a hearing, without a cause? Mr. Helge stood up in the services and screamed loud and vigorously and complained how the state had an ex parte hearing. That is, they made a ruling without anybody from the Worldwide Church of God being there to defend themselves or being there to state their side of the case. But then the Worldwide Church of God does the same thing. It does exactly that. Have I been given a hearing? Would the Worldwide Church of God grant me 10 minutes from the pulpit to tell you, to tell the brethren that I was not guilty of this? No. It would never happen. They have spoken hours. They have told everyone hours and hours of time of what they say happened. Would they give Wayne Cole and me equal time, or even a fraction of equal time? And the answer, of course, which you all know, is no. Where is the love of God? Where is God's mercy? Where is God in all of this? God is in heaven, and the Bible is God's word. And I guess what men do, we just have to overlook. But I know in my heart, and I know in Wayne Cole's heart,
that what we did strictly for the benefit of the church and college, not for ourselves. Thank you for listening to this tape. Goodbye.